Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pause podcast, which is usually from a cow shed in West Wales, but today it's from a museum in West Wales because we're recording this at Narberth Museum where Emma works in what I could describe as the library. And the reason we're here is to do with other projects that involve us going out and about in the town that we'll say a bit more about later. So hello, Emma. How are you this morning?
I'm good. A little bit cold, but I'm well, thank you.
Yes, indeed. It is a cold day in West Wales. But the heating's being valiant here, I must say. Anyway, in this episode, we're going to talk about Welsh voices we like, who may not be as well known as some of the other poets we're considering in the series. So, Emma, who have you chosen?
So the first person I've chosen is Rhiannon Hooson. Mm. I just love her writing. I couldn't find much out about her biographically, which made me even more intrigued by her. I just love the themes in her work, the kind of folkloric, female-centred, environmental vibe of it all. She's one of my favourites.
Great.
How about you? Who have you selected?
Well, I've chosen Kathy Miles, and there's several reasons for that. One is that I'm in a stanza group with her, actually, and she's a fantastic teacher. But also, I like her work very, very much. She's an amazing poet, I think.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of crossover between her and Rhiannon Hooson, but we can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But I've encountered Rhiannon Hooson in an online course that she runs, which I recommend, and it's linked to the seasons, and you get prompts. You don't get much interaction with Rhiannon, but you get prompts and a Facebook group, I think. And it was very, very good.
Mm.
So what is it about her that you especially like?
I think the kind of the mystery, the kind of history and superstition and spell casting and the ancient and current concerns about the environment and the way she kind of weaves them all together in a kind of masterly way.
She does feel very modern, doesn't
she? Does.
She?
Yeah.
And she uses the internet in a sort of modern way.
Yeah, but always tied to some kind of root, some ancient way of being or kind of instinct that is within us all, I think. So really appeals to me. I love it.
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, I remember, I think this might have been a live workshop I went on with her. And you might have been there as well.
At Rossagilwyn.
That's right. We did this incredible exercise where we had to think about a building and then we travelled back in time in that building.
Yeah.
And that was such an amazing exercise, actually. Yes. I've thought about it loads. I have the sense with her, she thinks a great deal about what she's doing and why she wants to do it.
Yeah.
She's very clear in terms of purpose and focus, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So have you chosen one poem in particular? Or?
I've chosen a few.
Right.
The first poem I chose by Rhiannon Hooson is called The Sin Eater. Okay. After my great-grandfather's death, his wife brought in a sin eater. I like to think it had been raining that day, that he was weighed down with water as she watched his approach from her heavy curtained window. And it goes on, and his hair slipping down his forehead, she had not bothered to stop the clocks, and in the dark hall they ticked to her time now.
Ooh, yeah. Power dynamic there.
Yeah, it just says so much. It's haunting, and it says a lot about female strength.
Yes.
And kind of subverts the idea of when somebody dies, how you should feel or how you believe people feel.
Yes, yes. What is a sin eater?
It's a person who is brought into the house to eat a kind of ritualistic meal, which meant that they were taking on the sins of the person who'd died so they could travel into heaven sin-free.
Via the food they took.
Via the food, yes.
Oh, that's such an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, when I was preparing for this last night, getting my books together like a good schoolgirl, I was thinking about that word sin eater, and I thought, I'm sure Kathy Miles has done something about a sin eater. And in her book Bone House, the first poem, it's called The Bone Merchant.
Right.
And the opening line is, weakly he came, loose as a sin eater. So that's, this is obviously a kind of haunting theme.
Yeah.
And then it goes on to talk about this bone merchant, you know, who's actually taking their bones. And it ends with a dream of rag and bone men in their eyes, which really struck home with me because we used to have a really handsome junk collector when I was growing up called Joe Pensarn. Right. He was really, really good looking. I think everybody in the street of all ages was slightly in love with him. He stopped in everybody's house for a cup of tea, and I hope nothing else. But but so it's interesting. So these were sort of historical phenomenon. Yeah. Presumably they're not around today.
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of anybody a sin eater in.
Right. Maybe the podcast should see if they can get a sin eater.
Yeah. Take our sins.
Yeah. But what will we cook them? That's the thing.
I know. And I thought that was another really interesting thing, is that the grandmother or great-grandmother has cooked the meal. And what does that say about power and...
Yeah.
Yeah, about how a woman has a power to kind of cleanse men of their sins. And...
Yes, it's an amazing idea. It's sort of rooted in country life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like. Yeah. I think she was brought up on a farm, wasn't she? Does she live in the Welsh Marches?
Yeah,
she
lives in the
now?
Welsh Marches, yeah.
Yeah, she's... I mean, I think, like Kathy Miles, there's a sort of rustic there, isn't there? Rural,
and
you know.
And I love it. I just love it.
Yes. So. Well, you're writing in a very fantastic tradition in poetry, aren't you? But you're bringing... She's a modern woman talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Have you got any other extracts from her you'd like to sort of... anything else you'd like
I would.
To?
Okay, so my next choice is from her most recent collection called Goliath.
Which has got an incredible cover. Is that a horse or...?
I feel it's a person in a sheet, but it does also look a bit mythical and mystical.
Yeah.
So, horse skull crown. Put on your armour. It's the autumn of the world and things are waiting to be unmade. Put on your armour of rat skin and finch bone and ash. And then it continues through. And then in the last stanza it says, endings buzz in the bones. Put on your horse skull crown. Let's dance the old dances. Let's speak the old words. Let us dance in our armour of plastic and hemlock and oil.
Ooh.
So this poem for me just encapsulates everything that we've been talking about. It's rooted in very ancient, mythical, Mary Lloyd-esque traditions.
Yeah.
But it makes me really aware of how we're kind of on the precipice of environmental disaster at the moment. It's very modern.
Yes. Yeah, so she's looking back but also being incredibly sort of present and looking forward as well.
Yeah.
And that's a really great thing to do in poetry, isn't it?
Yeah. To tie time together.
Yes. And it makes me think there's almost a kind of sort of Welsh rural gothic thing going on, you know, which is very interesting and you might relate to the sort of folk horror films that are getting made by Welsh directors now.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Kathy Miles, you know, so her book Bone House has got all these skulls on the cover, and I just picked three poems, just talk a little bit about them. So she does lots of short poems, which I always like short poems.
Yeah.
Because I kind of think I like the sort of immediacy of them. So she wrote one called Bee Talk, and this is only 8 lines long. And it's just somebody, a beekeeper, presumably. It opens with, she's there, almost in the hawthorn shadow, leaning on the fence, primrose sun hat tipped across her forehead. And then it ends with, I hear her voice in the bees' incessant chatter as she busies through petals, buries herself inside their scented hearts. It's just capturing a moment of her seeing this beekeeper.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's very short and very small, but very evocative. And what I particularly like about Cathy's work, so Cathy is based in West Wales, and she writes a lot about everyday country life, I think, and about memory. But she's very strong on sound, so you've got bees' incessant chatter, busies through petals,
yeah.
Berries herself. You know, it's poetry that cries to be read aloud, actually. Yeah.
And it's the other thing that poetry does so well, you know, like we just talked about how it can travel through time and bring it all together. It can also capture a single moment so precisely and beautifully.
Yeah, yeah. And it can just be a few milliseconds, yeah. Which it probably was, but yeah. And we know that sort of feeling that's in the atmosphere on a hot day when you can hear bees buzzing.
Yeah.
It's really reminiscent of that. Yeah. Another one I picked from this book is, and this is really, I think, going into the similar area to Rhiannon. This is called A Cure for the Fever.
Mm.
And it starts with, and it's very imaginative and a bit magical realism-y. They wrapped her with an oil of swallows for the pain, the heart of a magpie steeped in finest wine. And when those failed to bring the fever down, they took a cuckoo from its summer nest, roasted it with marjoram and sorrel, fed her the ashes gently from a ladle. And then it ends with, and from her mouth poured forth the purest song as she flew from the open casement, her wings a febrile flap across the thermals.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of turned into a bird. She's been given all these different bird cures and seems to have become one. You know, it's very evocative stuff.
And very witchy in a similar way, isn't it?
Kind of mixing
up this potion.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They are in similar areas subject-wise, I think. So I travelled to Aberaeron to chat to Cathy. It was a pretty windy day, and we did this interview in the back of my car, so apologies if the sound is not great. So Cathy, how did you get to be such a great poet?
Well, I totally dispute that I'm a great poet. I think there are thousands of writers today who are far better than me, but I do work at it quite hard. When I left my job in the library in Lampeter and decided to do the MA in creative writing, what I did then was I swapped over my day of work 9 to 5 and thought, well, if I'm going to do this seriously, then I've got to put the same effort into writing that I would have put into my library job. So that's what I do really, and I did that all through the MA. I got up at 9 o'clock, worked through till lunchtime, had a break, and then worked through till 5 and then finished for the evening. So I do work at it as much as I possibly can.
Gosh, so no such thing as writer's block for you then?
I used to get writer's block a lot, but I find now that I'm retired, you know, when you're working, you tend to be tunnel visioned, you know, getting up, going to work, problems at work, coming home again. But now I'm retired from that, I find that my interest in the world is so much greater that I don't run out of things that I want to write about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you find it easy to find your poetry voice?
I didn't have a poetry voice. I used to write poetry when I was a child. I wrote quite a lot of poetry then. But then when I was in my teens and at university, I always wanted to write plays. I wanted to be a playwright. So I did. I majored in drama rather than poetry when I did my degree. And then in 1984, Gillian Clark started up the Lampeter Writers Group in Lampeter, and I joined that, and suddenly the world of poetry opened up again, and from then on it was mostly poetry that I wrote.
Right, okay. What sort of poets do you like?
Well, I've always liked narrative poetry. So when I was growing up, and it continues now, I still like the great epic narrative poems such as the Odyssey and the Iliad. I like Milton. I always loved Alexander Pope. So I tended to like long narrative poetry that told a story. Nowadays, my tastes are much, much wider. I love Mary Oliver. I love Gillian Clark, obviously, because she taught me such a lot. Mena Elvin. Other poets I really admire who are writing at the moment. Pascal Petit, I think, is absolutely brilliant. But there are so many young coming-up poets that I also admire, a lot of whom are in Wales, like Ray Howells, Natalie Holborough, the great Jonathan Edwards, you know. So a lot of them are actually based in Wales, but also, you know, in the rest of the UK.
Ah, that's great. That's really great to hear. So what have you chosen to read and why, please?
Well, I've chosen my poem Lamping, which is about badger baiting, which is perhaps not the most nicest subject for a podcast, but it means more to me, this poem, than anything else, I think. When I was first living with my current partner, we lived in Kilkennin, and one of our neighbours was actually arrested for badger baiting and sent to prison. And at the time, obviously, I thought this was dreadful, but I'd never seen a badger. You know, I didn't actually know what the reality of the creature looked like, only in pictures. And then when we moved just outside Eberaren, we started to feed a badger set, which is a couple of fields away. And it suddenly came home to me in huge emotion exactly how cruel this practice was. And it's a poem that I wrote for my badgers, and because of that, it's very special to me.
Great.
So do you want me to read it?
Yes, please. That'd be lovely.
Okay, Lamping. Night spiced with fox, with petrichor and loam, and here now a gleam of torch and jacklight, as these men, eager as truffle mongers, wild for the scent of fungus, delve and probe, skulk and blunder in this damp hinterland. Shovel-handed, they dig through earth and stone, sweating with their labour and yearning to hear the clang of metal when it meets with bone. And he is snarling, slack-jawed, backing down the tunnels, chittering with fear, his lungs a bellow of air, his baited breath held close inside him, human rank on his tongue. His head's a zebra crossing, an unchecked barcode. And in the dark he's jumble-loined, lubberly with his fright, his body hunched, flat-bristled to the wall. Above they wait, ready for that heavy wedge of muscle, as he bursts, white with spittle, through the soil, and the terrier scampers, light-hearted as a boy freed by the end-of-school bell. But truth to tell, terrier doesn't want a punch above his weight, prefers the feel of rat between his teeth, the slippery ease and squeal as he locks to rodent throat. But master pays his wages in biscuit, rich red meat, so down he goes, finds, fights, holds, while men listen, dig, shovel, and the owl throws caution to the wind with her alarm. And up he comes, old Mr. Brock, claw marks on his nose, half blind and tamping mad. Dazzled by light, deafened by barks and cheers, the shock of men and lurchers standing there. He's caught, slung into a sack, face smashed to keep him quiet, his legs tied tight together. Tossed to the back of an old green pickup, and saved for later, for an evening's sport. But earth will not forget him, the soft curl of his body, the bristly nest of him. And when these men at last are laid to rest, we'll feast with relish on their rotting flesh.
Fantastic, thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
It was absolutely wonderful, especially in the back of a car. Really brilliant, thank you. So just to finish on, any sort of tips for those of us who aspire to be great poets and more in your direction. Clearly, self-discipline and writing regularly is important. Anything else?
Well, I have to say at this point that I've been massively helped, not only by Gillian Clark in the Lampeter Writers Group and by all the members of the group there, but also by the Stanza Carmarthen Group, who regularly take our poems apart bit by bit and make them better by their advice. So I definitely suggest joining a writing group. Read other people, read all the time. Contemporary poets, old poets, any poet you can lay your hands on, and also go to a workshop, because that's where your writing will start to improve.
Yeah, great. That's great. That's very helpful. Thank you ever so much, Cathy. That's just brilliant.
Thank you for having me.
Anything else you want to say about Rhiannon? I mean, presumably you're thinking that people should grab hold of her collections if they get a chance.
Oh, absolutely. It's stunning, absolutely stunning. And I'm sure I say that about every poet we talk about, but it speaks to me that her poetry, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, so her website is inkandoaktree.com if you're interested in looking at her prompts. And she also sells things on Etsy.
Yes.
Which I admire greatly.
Yeah.
So these are exciting voices, I think, aren't they? Yeah. How do they fit, do you think? If we're talking about Welsh poetry voices generally, are they cohesive in any way? Or is what people are up to quite fragmentary? I mean, like a lot of the world feels today.
Well, I think the more poetry I read generally, not just Welsh poetry, but all poetry, you see like themes, like totally coincidentally, I guess. It's a very unifying thing. You can feel that the themes that come out in all poetry really are common themes. They're about being human.
Yeah.
And about maybe the things that we share rather than the things that divide us.
Yes.
And even if the stories being told are very, very different and have happened in different places and at different times, the human response to them is very similar.
Yes, yeah. I mean, something that this getting ready for this episode's made me think about is, I was thinking about, you know, we did Llandeilo Lit Fest, didn't we, online during COVID, and we had Marvin Thompson, Natalie Holborough and Evra Rose.
Yeah.
And it made me think about how the extent to which good poetry does reflect the environment and location of its creator, because they're much more urban writers. I think they're really great writers.
Yeah.
But their flavour is urban, whereas Rhiannon and Cathy, their flavour is not.
No.
And I mean, they both really distinguish themselves in these sort of more remote parts of Wales. You know, Cathy won the Bridport Prize and that's amazing. I think there's some very exciting stuff going on. I went to I'm possessed by self-improvement. So I went to a very interesting online workshop run by somebody called Janet Ahmed, who's got a publishing company called Lucent Dreaming, and she's based in Cardiff. And she's an absolutely fantastic, inspirational young woman.
Mm.
And she's publishing poetry and all sorts of different things. And this session was aimed at encouraging those of us who were attending to, you know, do our own thing a bit more, to be a bit more like Janet and to really have a go.
Mm.
And everyone found it incredibly inspiring. She was also extremely honest about money and struggling and things like that. And I thought, oh, it's really, this is part of an exciting scene in Cardiff. And I know there's been some stuff going on in the Capital Centre with people who are making their own magazines and there's this publication, outrageous publication, The Paper Wales. But there's lots of sort of exciting DIY, interesting media around publishing and poetry, only in a small way. But the practitioners who are doing it are fantastic, I think.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple of other people you thought were interesting writing at the moment.
So I also love the writing of Abir Amir. So shall I read you a little bit of The Well by Abir Amir?
Yes, okay.
The Well. Fled Baghdad in the desert storm, returned to find thirsty taps in days when no news is bad news. The man with wife and six children walked on the road to Baghdad, dreamt that coming home would mean he could give each one more than a capful of water from more than one 500 milliliter bottle.
Oh.
I just so admire this writing.
It's very precise, isn't it? I've met Abia at a Poetry Wales do pre-COVID. She's absolutely lovely, great sense of humour. And her work is very, very precise. What's her background?
So she grew up in Wales and is of Iraqi heritage. And her first collection, which is called Inhale Exile, explores her family's background and focuses on the human cost of war. Yeah, and she's also a dentist, which is fascinating. I love it when people have such different aspects to their personality and life. So.
Yes, yeah. It's a great thing about poetry because very few people make any money out of it.
Yeah.
People do other things. And a lot of practitioners are completely in it for the love of it.
Yeah. And this poem just affects me so deeply because of this 500 milliliter bottle of water and the well that the family have kept just in case. It says so much more about the horror of the situation than if there was any explicit detail on that.
It's just
a simple object that we can all recognise and all, you know, have engaged with, and it's just so affecting.
Yes. Mm. She's a really good poet. Mm. I think she read at this event, as I recall. She was very, really good.
Yeah.
And able to switch very quickly from deeply serious to very funny, you know.
Yeah.
So very good. It's good. Well, I think we should really take up the mantle of this Welsh rustic rural Gothic and take it forward. And just to remind people, so the collections we focused on, so Rhiannon's is The Other City and Goliath, the more recent one, and Cathy's is Bone House. And if you want to Google Cathy Miles, then she comes up in a kind of poetry register. I think she's got her own website, but she's also on Facebook and Twitter. So, and they're definitely extremely interesting, newish, aren't they? Mm. Welsh voices. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back in a few weeks.